Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this first hour of the show today, we'll be talking some about the life and the career of a man that, in the minds of certainly many people, is a key figure in the development of environmental thinking here in this country, Aldo Leopold. He was born in Iowa in 1887. He studied forestry at Yale. He worked for the Forest Service for 19 years, and he also taught at the University of Wisconsin at Madison until he died in 1948 at the relatively young age of 61. Many people will know him for a book that he wrote, A Sand County Almanac, that was actually published after he died in 1949. This morning in this hour, we have here in the studio us a guest who's been interested in Aldo Leopold and his thinking and how it developed for some time now and has authored a book. It is a biography, she says, perhaps not a full biography, but the idea is in some kind of inquiry into his life and how it is that his thoughts developed. Our guest is Julianne Lutz Newton, and the book, which has now just been out for a couple of months, is Aldo Leopold's Odyssey, the subtitle Rediscovering the Author of a Sand County Almanac. Island Press is the publisher. She is a research associate here at the University of Illinois. She's also president of the Burroughs Institute in Roxbury, New York. She's written articles for various publications, including Conservation Biology, The Illinois Steward, Journal of Civil Society, and American Midland Naturalist. And we're pleased that she could be here on the program with us to talk about Aldo Leopold. Questions, certainly from people who are listening, are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. I think you explained in the book that your introduction, probably like that of a lot of people to Aldo Leopold, was Sand County Almanac. You were here, and somebody said, here, you should read this book.
That's right.
What did you think about it when you first started reading it?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't really get it at first, I don't think. And I think that might be the case with a number of people. It's a more difficult book to come to than might seem at face value. There's a lot packed into it. There's a certain density there. And also it challenges some fundamental assumptions that I think most of us hold, cultural assumptions, which also makes it somewhat difficult to get our heads around.
Yeah. Like what? Give me an example.
Leopold himself in the foreword discusses his book as a sort of dissent. and many of his essays have to do with voicing dissenting attitudes to what seem to be prevailing cultural attitudes, which you could summarize as a sense of ardent individualism, a way of looking at nature that sees it as single resources, so a sort of commodification of nature. And also the attitude that the standard for living and making decisions at various levels is an economic standard, and that there are things that are valuable beyond that as well.
It seems that he raises issues that we are still struggling with. That is an approach to this relationship between humans and nature that says that humans have a sense of entitlement to exploit nature in any way that they choose, and also this strong then as now, this strong idea that we have here in the United States that basically you're entitled to do with your property whatever you want because it's yours and nobody can tell you. And still those kind of ideas today are very controversial. You can get into some strong arguments. I would imagine back in the earlier years of last century, to articulate ideas like that would have been seen that as even more kind of radical and problematic than they are now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the exciting things about studying Leopold, and one of the important things about him and his work is that the questions that he was addressing and raising and the challenges he was bringing to light are ones that continue with us today. So I think it's still very valuable to study his thinking. Haven't been too many people that have examined, if you want to summarize the big guiding question of his career, how can people, modern people, live with the land prosperously and keep it healthy at the same time? And there haven't been too many people that have examined that question from so many different angles, from economic, political, cultural, scientific angles, and then have done a good job of synthesizing that thinking and articulating it.
Mm-hmm. He, as I just mentioned, this gave this very, very brief sketch of his career. He was born in Iowa, and he went to college at Yale, and he mm-hmm. studied forestry. And graduated, he got his forestry degree from Yale in 1909.
That's right.
So that's sort of the official beginning of his career when he finished college and got right. his degree in forestry. In 1909, mm-hmm. what was the state of, you know, we wouldn't even have the word environmentalism mm-hmm. that we have now. Maybe people would talk about conservation. Mm-hmm. What was the state of conservationist thinking in the United States in 1909?
Mm-hmm. There was a lot going on. Most people's view of conservation was a natural resource basis. Of course, Teddy Roosevelt had done a lot to promote conservation ideas, including eventually setting aside land and things like that. The Forest Service was established just a few years before that, which is where Leopold began his career, and their emphasis was on preserving public forest areas and that resource for multiple uses, including timber, protection of water flows, and during that time, homesteading was going on, and it was a very exciting and transformational time. Many changes were taking place, and people were just beginning to grapple with the limits of nature around them. There had been something of the idea that this huge country was limitless mm-hmm. in its abundance of offerings for people to use.
There are probably still people who think that.
I think there probably are.
How was it that when he went to college that he chose to go into forestry?
He, from an early age, had enjoyed being outdoors, and his father had been a hunter. He'd become very concerned about. He had seen declines of wildlife populations in his hunting places and seen changes going on in the landscape, and he very much wanted to do something that would help people address the limits of nature and not overuse resources. And this new field of forestry was one of the first professional fields to open up in that natural resource realm.
Forgive me, it sounds to me like maybe your headphones might be up kind of loud.
Okay.
I'm hearing this. Maybe not. It sounds to me like we're almost on the verge of getting some heat, some feedback on the headphones. So I wouldn't want that to happen. Also, I want you to be comfortable because, you know, some of my coworkers are. I think I've become a little deaf over the years listening to headphones, so they have them up kind of loud. But this will give me an opportunity to introduce again our guest, Julianne Newton. She's a research associate here at University of Illinois, Urbana-Champain, and is the author of Aldo Leopold's Odyssey. The subtitle of this book is Rediscovering the Author of a Sand County Almanac. It's published by the Island Press and just came out in November. And if you're interested in reading about Aldo Leopold, this would be a good place to start. I think that probably for a lot of people, they know the name. And they probably would have said to you, well, yes, I know. I think Aldo Leopold was somebody who was important in environmentalism. But I expect there are a lot of people who really couldn't tell you very much about him. Maybe I should just speak for myself. I would say, you know, before spending some time with the book, I really couldn't have told you anything much more significant other than, yes, I know this man's name and I know why he's important. But to tell you anything about what he'd said, I'm afraid that I couldn't. So, and I think that for people who are interested in having some introduction to who he was and what he thought, that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's probably most known for his book, A Sand County Almanac, which has sold over 2 million copies and been translated in 9 languages and has been a popular thing to read for people in the conservation movement. But he's a lot more than just the author of A Sand County Almanac. And I think I hope to examine all those different sides of Leopold. The title of the book, Aldo Leopold's Odyssey, kind of indicates a number of dimensions that having to do with Leopold's life and work. He certainly was on his own odyssey, intellectually and career-wise, going from the Forest Service to game management, to a professorship and more of a landscape ecology kind of professional. At the same time, his focus was on what he came to view as the odyssey of life, which he understood people to be a part of. And he saw that in two dimensions. One was an ecological dimension where soils, waters, plants, and animals were connected by energy flows, particularly, and also an evolutionary dimension, which reached back into deep history. And these two dimensions were sort of at right angles to one another, but that was his perspective. And
yeah. Well, we have a caller. I think we can bring them into the conversation. Okay. And also, I want to tell other people who are listening that questions, comments certainly are welcome, as always. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. And our first caller here is on nearby Belgium, nearby Danville, on line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask about, is there a relationship between Leopold and Isaac Walton?
Leopold was a member of the Isaac Walton League, and so he did do some work with them and appreciated some of their ideas.
And also Mirror, was Mirror related with them at all?
He was sort of in a different generation, but he certainly had read Muir's work and was familiar with his thinking.
Mirror being more in the 18th century, 19th century instead of the 20th.
Right, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yep,
all right, thanks.
You.
Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. After Leopold graduated from Yale in 1909, that's when he went to work for the Forest Service. He worked for the Forest Service for 19 years, and his first assignment was in the Southwest. He lived in Arizona and did work in Arizona and New Mexico. How do you think that spending time in that part of the country, particularly in the Southwest, had any effect on what it was he thought about, how he thought about nature, how he thought about the relationship between people and the environment?
Yeah. The Southwest in 1909 was still sort of a frontier land, and so it certainly had it gave Leopold a chance to observe changes really in action. When he got out to Arizona and New Mexico to District 3 forest area that he was working in, the railroad lines were coming out. People were homesteading and establishing new settlements. Telephone wires were being strung. There was just great amounts of change going on. People were trying different agricultural methods in this very dry land. And it was a lot of those methods. It was grazing and plowing, and these different things were in this dry land, were having some ill effects. And Leopold got a chance to see those firsthand. When he started out, he inspected certain areas in 1909 that he saw again in the 1920s, and the difference between them before settlement or just as settlement was taking place, and after settlement was sometimes profound. Grazing could by cattle, livestock, eating grass and compacting areas and creating gullies that would drain lands and cause soil erosion, enormous gullies sometimes take place that would drain the moisture off the rest of the soil and make it not very habitable, or certainly not possible to grow crops over the long term. And people actually who had settled the land just a couple of decades earlier were not able to live there anymore because of what the destruction that had happened.
Yeah, I think it seems that an important sort of understanding, and maybe at that time it seemed revolutionary. I'm not certain it seems so revolutionary now, but the idea was that the land in and of itself had established ways of being, established patterns of being, and that when people come into it, if they completely disregard that and decide that they're going to put it to whatever uses that they have in mind, that can turn out to be very destructive, because if people come and then they disrupt what had been sort of the natural pattern pattern of things, particularly of the way that, water, the hydrology, the way that water worked in the environment, that by disturbing that can be very destructive, and that kind of destruction can happen over a fairly short period of time.
It can. And then, of course, most dramatically was what happened in the Great Plains later on in the 1920s and 30s with the Dust Bowl. Just millions of acres plowed to plant mostly wheat, but other single crops, and without paying too much attention to what climate and to the way the soil had been forming over many, many generations. There had been a diversity of prairie plants there that had over time built up the soil by their living there in a community. And when people plowed that up, there was no the soil fertility, instead of building, began to decline, and there was nothing to hold the soil in place, and it started to blow, obviously, is in huge dust storms across the country. That was a very profound wake-up call. But one of Leopold's central messages certainly was that that the land provided certain it was organized and functioned in certain ways, and that it was bigger than people, in a sense, if you want to put it that way, and that people would be wise to learn as much as they could about the land and to fit their ways into it, instead of thinking that they could bend it to their own wills.
When he went to work for the Forest Service, this was in 1909. I think that this was at, I don't recall right offhand when the Forest Service was set up, but it hadn't, the Forest Service at that point, I don't think had existed
just for about
very
4 years.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that one of the things that happened, if you take a look at the history of the Forest Service, you say in the early years there was a lot of, you know, sort of debate and discord about what the purpose of the Forest Service was, and a real tension, I think, between, on the one hand, this idea that it, the purpose was to facilitate the development of that natural resource, and on the one hand, and then on the idea that some people had the idea that, well, that actually conservation was should be part of the mission, and I think it's over time it has changed. Some, maybe some people wouldn't say enough, but it has certainly changed from the one to mostly the one to mostly the other. How did he fit in there, and was did he actually argue for a more kind of conservationist function for the service? How did he think about this issue of resource consumption?
Yeah, there has always been that tension between how much to use and how much to leave alone, if you want to put it that way. One of the things that questions that Leopold raised in 1913, after only a few years working there, was that the standard for conservation work in the Forest Service, and this thinking later carried through into his work with game and to land in general, was what is the effect of our actions on the forest itself? And well, that opened up a whole range of questions to continue probing. What kind of effect was okay? What in other words, did land in good condition look like? What did forest in good condition look like? And he suggested that we use resources, we use things that the earth has to offer to the point where we can keep land and it's able to renew itself. He came to call that concept land health, the land's ability, its capacity to self-organize and renew itself. And that much of his thinking, especially later in life, was to develop what that meant.
Let's talk with another caller. We have a couple, actually. Charleston is next. This is line four. Hello.
Yes, thank you. I hope my question is germane to the subject matter, and I think concerns forests too. In Illinois particularly, and I think around the nation, the push for ethanol, if you've already addressed it, I'm sorry, but I missed a couple minutes of the show. But in any case, what that is going to do to land and water resources keeps appearing to me to be have an enormous impact. And the scuttle around is that when we cannot produce enough at home, then they're going to import and then begin devastating other lands to get fuel for the internal combustion engine, which I perceive as a dinosaur and needs to be eradicated. I guess my question is the Forest Service or your guest, David, cognizant of what is going on with ethanol?
Yes. let me just take it back to Leopold and I think questions that we might raise that would be similar to ones that he would raise in relation to that issue would be, how far can we push that idea and keep the land healthy? can we grow the crops that we need to produce ethanol and keep the land healthy at the same time? And again, by land health, Leopold meant the land's capacity to renew itself. And that had a component of native biodiversity, had a component of water flows that were healthy and clean and had normal regimes, had an element of the soil's ability to renew its own fertility. And so these are questions I think worth raising in relation to that issue of ethanol, like they are with any.
Could I have a follow-up, David?
Yeah, sure.
What is making myself very anxious is about water. That the word around is that it's either 3-1 or 6-1, plus the insertion of fossil fuel, gasoline, namely, into the ethanol to make it combustible enough. And at that rate of, even if it is 3-1, and we're talking of 100 million gallons of fresh water, I'm assuming, and the natural gas that it takes to boil that as part of the process, and then the heavy transport that is going to be both rail and truck to get the crops out of the field and to these plants, and then the price of meat and everything else that is going to follow along in its wake. It just seemed incredible to me that people are still thinking positively about those things. Here where I live in Charleston, not four blocks away, is a proposed plant. And it is just... it's devastating to me that there is no outcry, that there is nobody awake, apparently. And perhaps your guest would know, finally, if what happens to the wastewater. I haven't been able to find that out. When they boil the products, and then there's got to be a certain amount of warm or hot water that flows away from those things.
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sure there probably are people on this campus at the University of Illinois that who do. It is a very serious issue, and I just keep bringing back to the question of whether we can do what we want to do and keep the land in good condition at the same time.
Well, sir, I appreciate the questions that the caller is raising, and I think that they're good ones. And here on this program, I think we, particularly now, because the president has talked about increasing ethanol production, we want to see if we can get some shows together sometime here in the near future, and we can talk about some of these issues and try to both have some people on who can speak for the industry and represent that point of view, and have some other folks, environmentalists or people who work in the energy area, to address some of those kind of questions, because I think that they're certainly important. So
yes.
I appreciate that. You know, one of the things that I think is really striking about Leopold is that I think today it's sometimes difficult to be optimistic when you look at how far human beings have come in their ability to influence the environment on a global scale, and mm-hmm. and that we've set ourselves up a pretty difficult problem. Mm-hmm. He, in his time here, even before World War II, really felt the same way. You know,
yes.
There seems to be sort of a dawn, almost a little bit of a dark side to him,
mm-hmm. yes.
Saying that, feeling that he wasn't really sure even then whether the kind of damage that already had been done could be turned around. I think he would say that doesn't mean we shouldn't try,
right.
But at the same time, I think he had some real doubts about mm-hmm. even then whether things had gone too far.
Yeah, He did. He had both sides. He had a very realistic side that was very sober. One of my favorite lines actually was in a letter to one of his good friends, Bill Vogt, who wrote the book Road to Survival. And in this letter to Bill Vogt, he said that the situation is hopeless doesn't mean we shouldn't do our best. those are good words. But at the same time, he certainly continued to do his best, and he did have hope. I mean, but the forces are very strong. He referred to them as the industrial juggernaut, you know, sometimes rolling across the country. And that he's probably most well-known, Leopold, too, for his land ethic. And this was a way of confronting these the attitude that that the industrial juggernaut sort of represented, a pursuit of wealth above some other values. And he really believed that in order to keep land healthy and keep our civilization and able to endure and prosper, would take valuing the land in ways that were beyond economic values, that were also ethical.
We're just a little bit past the midpoint here. I have another caller, but just for the benefit of people who might have tuned in, I want to introduce again our guest, Julianne Lutz-Newton. She's the author of Aldo Leopold's Odyssey. The subtitle of her book is Rediscovering the Author of a Sand County Almanac. And indeed, we're here talking about something about the life and the ideas of this man that many people regard as a key figure in the development of the modern environmental movement. He was born in 1887. He died in 1948, not very old, 60. At that time, he was teaching at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Before that, he worked for 19 years for the Forest Service. And as we have said, that probably a lot of people will know him for his book, A Sand County Almanac, a book that was actually published shortly after he died. It was published in 1949. The book here, Aldo Leopold's Odyssey, published by Island Press, and just came out in November. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Next, let's talk with someone in Savoy, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Hello. Yes.
I'm calling because I was also raised in Burlington, Iowa, mm-hmm. and some family members are friends, and my first urge was to pick up the phone and call him and tell him about this book. But I suppose you've interviewed the family members, have you?
I have, yes. I've become...
The nieces?
Particularly his living children. Nina Leopold became a dear friend, and I've corresponded with the other Leopold children and some grandchildren.
So
yes.
The nieces are well aware.
I believe so.
Well, it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Is there still an organization which meets yearly to perpetuate his memory?
The Aldo Leopold Foundation exists in Baraboo, Wisconsin, and you can find them online. And they're very active. In fact, they have a big new instructional building project going on that they hope to open in the spring. And they have seminars during the summer at the shack, and things are really thriving there.
Yes, I knew they went to the shack. And then where would this building be that's under construction?
It's right near there, right near the shack in Baraboo.
Oh, good.
Yep.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
And will you be here in the community? You're hoping to be in the community for a while?
I will be here for a while.
Good.
Thank you.
Maybe sometime we can meet.
I'd like that.
Appreciate your work.
Thank you.
And to help spread the word.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. Others Bye. Are certainly welcome to call. Again, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Maybe I didn't mention I should that Julianne is a research associate here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and is now doing postdoc work in geology.
Yes, with Sue Kiefer in the Department of Geology.
All right. One of the things that I'd like to have you talk about in connection with Leopold is wildlife conservation. Mm-hmm. Because certainly that was something that was important to him. He was very interested in when he went, after his time in the Forest Service, when he went to University of Wisconsin, he was a professor of game management.
Right.
And like a lot of conservationists of his day, he was also a hunter. And I think now maybe people have a hard time understanding how you could be both of those things. But that didn't seem – he didn't seem to have any trouble in it. You know, Audubon didn't seem to have any trouble with that. A lot of those men of that time didn't seem to have any trouble with the idea that you could be a hunter and a conservationist both. Here we're talking about, again, at about this time, particularly in the, around 1915, when we're starting to see some of the first laws, at least some of the first national laws, regulating hunting.
Right.
Before that, there would have been a long period of time where pretty much you could shoot anything you wanted to. And that also were the times that we saw in incredible amounts of animals, birds, particularly killed by either by sport hunting or by market hunters. How did he think about the idea of wildlife conservation, and again, as a kind of a resource that could be developed, preserved, and used in a kind of a sustainable way?
The decline of wildlife was a national concern by the late 19th century, actually. And by the time Leopold started his work in the Forest Service, it was in the New York Times frequently. It was in the press. It was a big concern, and there were a couple of different ideas about why wildlife was declining. On the one hand, many people thought, well, it was over hunting. But then there was another group of people that suggested, well, maybe it had a lot to do with the habitat changes going on, the ways that people were changing land, and that maybe wildlife species couldn't thrive in these new kinds of environments that people were creating. And actually, Leopold was hired before he became a professor of wildlife game management at the University of Wisconsin in 1933. Before that, in the late 1920s, he was hired by a sporting industry to do a game survey. And the goal of that was to figure out how much hunting versus habitat changes were affecting declines of wildlife species. And within a couple of years, it seemed pretty clear to him that the changes people were making on the land was having a very profound effect on wildlife. It wasn't just over hunting. In fact, the changes in habitat were a major cause. And at first, he looked at wildlife management similarly to forestry. That was natural. He kind of even imported forestry ideas in his first formulation of wildlife management. Over time, he increasingly became more ecological in his understanding, the way things were interconnected. So in trying to manage particular game species, one or a few at a time, he realized was probably not possible because they were connected to everything else. And over time, his thinking really became more integrated in understanding the ways that soils, waters, plants, and animals were fit together, and the need to look at the land in that integrated way as a community of life and not just one resource at a time. So his thinking really evolved on that.
Yeah. Did he, when he took a look at, in his study of wildlife populations and their health and their ups and downs, did the things that he learned there influence his thinking about human population?
There was some give and take in the ideas of cycles, wildlife population cycles, and the things that were happening with humans with the Great Depression. There was a really interesting meeting that took place in 1931 in Canada. A wealthy man brought together a bunch of cutting-edge scientists of the time to discuss cycles, including everything from fisheries to wildlife cycles to human cycles and economic things. And there was a real push to figure out if there was some common thread. And people proposed everything from diseases to sunspots to, you know, many things in between. And that also helped Leopold to understand just increasingly how complex nature was and how difficult to understand, and again pushed him to look at land as an integrated whole that was connected and to have this ecological viewpoint of things.
Let's talk with someone else here. We have a caller in Champaign. It's line one. This person's on line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I don't know what the name of the city is, but not too far from Madison, they hold a huge conference on alternative, resources and stuff. And are you familiar with that? Is there any relationship with that with Leopold or not?
I am not exactly sure if I'm familiar with that in particular. I know there's a lot of great work going on in Madison, and a lot of it is connected with Leopold's legacy. Kurt Meine, who was a biographer who wrote the first biography of Leopold, which is a full biography and is a wonderful piece of work as well. Kurt Meine, he's in that area and helps do some conservation work in Madison. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were linked.
Now, how far where he was? Somebody, what was the town that was mentioned before that? His family or something or other?
Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Okay, now how far? That's quite a way. Is that quite a way?
Maybe about 30 or 40 miles
from Madison.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, other questions? 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Again, our guest is Julianne Lutz Newton. She's a research associate here at the University of Illinois and is author of a recent book looking at the thinking and ideas of Aldo Leopold. And her book is titled Aldo Leopold's Odyssey, and it's published by the Island Press. Just came out in November, so if you'd like to read it, you can find it, I'm sure, in the bookstore. Questions are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. How did Aldo Leopold feel about all of the conservation programs that were organized as part of the New Deal? Because this would have been a huge thing that the government was involved in.
Yeah. At that time, there was suddenly some money available to do various programs, and there seemed to be sort of a burst of hope. But as Leopold interacted with, he was on some national level committees for wildlife preservation. He sat with J. Ding Darling, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist and later was in charge of the U.S. Biological Survey. He sat on a committee with him to look at wildlife preservation. Their efforts seem to continue to be stymied. and again, the conflict and the tension between meeting human needs in that time, which were very profound, and preserving wildlife, and people not being able to see necessarily the connection between healthy land and healthy wildlife populations and healthy human populations and even economic health. So he ended up becoming discouraged by New Deal programs, although the Soil Conservation Service did some work he thought was very hopeful. They would, using Civilian Conservation Corps people, go to a particular place and try to integrate both soil concerns and wildlife concerns and water flows. And so he did see some real hope in that. But again, those ran into ending. And he was also not only frustrated with some of the programs, but also in how to get people to continue to do things that were in the interest of the land and in their communities that weren't necessarily right away economically profitable. And he continued to run into that that question and examine it from many different perspectives. And he did come up with a number of things to try out that had to do with both with a political organization and economic ideas and social kinds of attitudes, so all sorts of different perspectives. But he did have a definite practical bent, and he really experimented with these things and suggested many things to try.
Did he think of himself as a scientist?
Yes, he did. He was. He perhaps has been a bit underappreciated as an ecologist. Mm-hmm. He started out in forest management, which was a scientific way of managing forests, but the more he tried to piece together stories of how the forests and other landscapes worked, the more he again saw the way things were interconnected and became ecological in his thinking, and was influenced by many ecologists of the day. Ecology was a new profession. It was 1915 when the Ecological Society of America became an institution, and the science was really professionalized, if I can make that word. So he was very influenced by that. At the same time, he contributed a great deal to the field of ecology. He gave a big talk to the Ecological Society of America in 1939 that really brought together his many ecological ideas of the day in a synthetic way that was really important to the field of ecology at that time, that was kind of struggling with bringing some ideas and concepts together. And by 1946, he was asked by the Ecological Society of America to be their vice president. He was their president in 1947, right before he died, actually. Mm. So, yeah, he was very much a scientist and ecologist.
Let's talk with someone else. This is also someone in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
It's my understanding that Leopold or land ethic represented the conservationist perspective of environmental policy. Is there a contrast between conservation under, as he saw it, and what I think is another ethic, preservation? Or are they the same thing?
There's been a lot of discussion about that in academic literature. I think Leopold would find some middle ground. There was, if you mean by preservation, leaving things alone without human impact, there was a time and a place for that in different types and sizes and scales of wilderness areas or other things like that. Conservation had to do from the beginning, defined in America, with use as well as with protecting resources. And so there was this aspect as well. So if you know, you could stand back and look at the whole American landscape, there's an important place for both kinds of thinking. And I think that Leopold tended to try and find middle ground.
Okay, could I ask one other question?
Yeah, sure.
One of the concerns I think Leopold had in his writings was this European or Eurocentric notion. I think David alluded to it, that the environment was something that we had a right to treat as conquerors and use it for our own needs, which seemed to be, if I'm not mistaken, contrary to the land ethic that the Native Americans or the indigenous Americans had. Am I right on that?
There's no one, I don't think, indigenous American viewpoint, probably. I'll just go to Leopold, and his idea was certainly that people were part of the community of life, that it was destructive and untrue to think of people as being detached from soils, waters, plants, and animals, and things that were around them, the ways that people were dependent on the land community and parts of it. And that was really a major message. And that was something that he grew to understand as his ecological understanding grew. And then there was also the ethical component. He was constantly bringing together these two different paths, if you wanted to say that, with the scientific path of learning about how the land and the world and nature is put together and works, and then this people, human attitudes and values path, and how to understand them in relation to each other.
But were not the human values and attitudes of Native Americans consistent with the conservationist ethic of Leopold?
I think some of them certainly were very much akin to it, yes.
All right. Well, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Well, it certainly seemed that he was trying to he was trying to find some kind of a middle way, mm-hmm. I think. I think on the one hand, I think he believed that human beings, they were entitled to make a living, to speak, you know,
right.
That they have a place in nature,
right.
And that he wouldn't argue that humans should have to impoverish themselves
right.
in order to preserve the environment.
Right.
On the other hand, I think that he was saying, well, how is it that is it possible for human beings to prosper and have the least bad impact on the environment? That all seemed to be the question. How mm-hmm. is it possible mm-hmm. to do that, and how is mm-hmm. it possible to
yes.
do that?
Yes. Yeah, it certainly was. He loved people and land. He wasn't misanthropic. So, yes, it was that tension of how to prosper, live well, have a civilization that could endure over generations and generations, and the only way for that to take place was for the land upon which people depended and which people were a part of to be healthy and able to renew itself. Mm. And so that was a very fundamental message.
So is that essentially, is that what part of or most of what he would mean when he talked about the land ethic, mm-hmm. when we use that phrase that's so much mm-hmm. associated with him? Is that essentially, is that what he would have meant?
Yeah. His most famous phrase is probably a thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the land. Community is wrong when it tends otherwise. And it's maybe not been fully understood as it might be. There was rich meaning to Leopold in those words and those terms that was grounded in scientific and ecological understanding, and it also incorporated this view that land was valuable for more than what it could give to us in terms of economic wealth, and that in turn was tied to his evolving concept towards his later in life called land health, which was a concept of the way the land was organized and functioned, and he towards the end of his life was calling for a new science of land health that would raise some different questions that would try and probe how it was that what was needed for land health, what land health looked like, how many species, how far could we press the land and cause it to change and have it still retain its own ability to renew itself. So there were a whole host of questions that he was hoping could be addressed around this idea of land health.
Mm-hmm. It seems that at least to the limited degree that I understand it, what he was talking about is maybe what we would now, the notion that we would now call an ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
the idea
mm-hmm.
that within a given kind of environment, mm-hmm. there are important relationships, connections, dependencies
mm-hmm.
between all of the various parts, animals, plants,
mm-hmm.
And that they're all kind of connected together. Each has a role to play, and if it's somewhere there's a disturbance,
mm-hmm.
it can affect the entire system.
Right, and over time, of course, there's always change in natural systems. What humans have brought in the modern day are very much more rapid and violent changes, if you want to use that word, than what has been over the rest of the history of nature, largely. So how much, adjustment at what rates can the land handle and still be able to maintain itself?
Mm-hmm.
And when we pass those limits, Leopold would say not only is that not prudent, but it's wrong.
Yeah. He, as I mentioned, that probably for a lot of people, if they know him or if they've read anything that he's written, it's Sand County Almanac,
right.
Which was something that he wrote for a general audience,
right.
Unlike a lot of the other things that he
mm-hmm.
perhaps had written during his mm-hmm. career that were written for other mm-hmm. ecological scientists.
Mm-hmm.
This was something that he was writing, he was trying to talk to everybody. And as I said, sadly enough, he died, he was only 61,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
was relatively, even for that time, would be relatively young.
Yes.
And the Sound County Almanac actually came out after he had passed.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people really wonder, speculate, well, if he had the opportunity to live for another 10
mm-hmm.
or 20
mm-hmm.
years, where he would have gone
yes.
from there.
Yes, he in his desk drawer were a number of unfinished manuscripts about land health, still probing that idea. He intended to write a new ecology textbook that would raise these questions, kind of maybe help develop a new science of land health, like he had helped develop a new science of game management a decade or two earlier. So he had his work continued. The evidence is that he would have continued to probe and pursue this new science of land health and this new concept for how people can fit their ways into nature's.
Well, for people today who work in these areas, or maybe even just for people who say that they're concerned about inequality in the environment, why do you think it's important? What do we learn by reading our environmental forebears and going back and looking at what they thought, how their ideas developed, what they wrote, how they mm-hmm. lived? What do we mm-hmm. get from today, do you think, from reading Aldo Leopold?
One of the things Leopold said was that the oldest task in human history was how to learn to live on a piece of land without spoiling it. So the questions that he raised and people like him who were concerned with similar questions over past generations have raised questions that are perpetual and still very pertinent. And by looking at the ways they examine questions, we can learn from our elders, so to speak. And again, there weren't too many people who were examining those questions, that fundamental question of how people can live on land prosperously and keep it healthy too, from so many different perspectives, and then was able to synthesize them and articulate them. So he can still be sort of a guide for our thinking. And I hope that Aldo Leopold's Odyssey, this book, might help to be a guide to Leopold's thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, the kinds of issues that he thought about and he wrestled with they haven't gone away. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to find answers to those same questions.
Yes.
So we don't have answers Mm-mm. yet. We're,
right.
It's like we're still working on them.
Every generation is going to need to raise and address. But there's some urgent, obviously urgent things going on. And maybe these questions need to be raised more often and more seriously than they are.
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to read some more about this man that we have talked about here this morning, Aldo Leopold, you can look at this book that we have discussed by our guest Julianne Lutz-Newton. The book is Aldo Leopold's Odyssey, Rediscovering the Author of a Sand County Almanac, published by the Island Press. Julianne Newton is research associate here at University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, doing postdoc work in geology. And, of course, if people want to read Sand County Almanac, this book is still in print, and you certainly can go out and find a copy.
Yes.
So you might go right to the source and,
yes.
and read that
yes,
as well.
Yes, do. Yes.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it.